The Baker Street Babes would like to thank their sponsor, the Baker Street Journal, the publication of the Baker Street Irregulars. It's been around since 1946, so it's almost as time-honored as Holmes and Watson themselves. It publishes 4 issues a year, spring, summer, autumn, winter, and a Christmas annual. Each issue is full of Sherlockian news, reviews of various publications, and articles that play the game. That means they're written from the perspective that Holmes and Watson were real people. I think we can all agree that Sherlock Holmes was real, can't we? Most importantly, you don't have to be a member of the BSI to subscribe to the journal or even to publish in it. So go check it out at www.bakerstreetjournal.com or follow the editor Steve Rothman on Twitter at BakerSTJournal. Thank you very much.
They call us the Irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1?
Welcome to the Baker Street Babes podcast, episode 25, wherein we talk with the awesome people who are behind Steampunk Holmes. Today, I'm joined by fellow babes, Lindsay Fay and Amy. How are you guys?
Not too shabby, thank you.
Great. Quick introductions. We're joined today by 3 people who are behind the Steampunk Holmes project, Richard, Daniel, and PC. If you guys could say hello to everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
So first we're going to start off asking you just a few questions. Richard, if you could talk to us about how the project got started.
Sure. So I've been developing interactive books for the iPad for a couple years now. And recently, last year, I started my own business to do it so that I could have, you know, total creative control. And anyways, I was looking for a subject matter on which to do it. And I've always been a big fan of Sherlock Holmes, and I'm becoming a really big fan of steampunk. So it just, you know, seemed natural to combine the two. I mean, who wouldn't put steampunk Holmes together, you know? But there's a lot more to it than just the idea. Of course, there's the whole execution. And for that, I really lean very heavily on my 2 main artists, which is Daniel Cortez and PC Martin. Daniel is he's the artist who's done all the wonderful portrait art, mechanical drawings, the scenes, animations, helped with the UI. It's just been great. And PC Martin is this fantastic writer who's been able to take just a glimmer of an idea and turn it into a wonderful story that I think people are really going to enjoy.
Well, and that leads me to my next question. Yeah, PC, you obviously came up to the story. Where did you begin? Where did you start? Because the first Steampunk Holmes story actually is loosely based on the Bruce Partington plans.
Well, I was introduced to the idea in, I think it was May or June last year. Daniel actually was the one who called my attention to it. It had been in the works already for a couple of months. He had been hired by Richard to draw the pictures and the artwork and things like that for this project, which is already underway. And in fact, I believe Richard already had he'd been testing other writers for the project. And he had a basic idea of how he wanted it done. And by the time the idea got to me, it was already past its initial stages. And so Mycroft was already a woman, and the idea was already to use the Bruce Partington plans. And basically from there, Richard just said, look, just fire away. So I spent literally the next 4 months doing very little else than listening over and over and over again to the complete canon of Sherlock Holmes, so as to familiarize myself with the style, with Doyle's very, very particular style, which is a little bit out of date in that he uses adjectives and more descriptives than any other writer would do in their right minds nowadays. And so I've had to succumb to a lot of protests from people that I've, you know, tested the drafts on. They're all like, no, it's way too descriptive. Cut out some of the adjectives. And I was like, sorry, I can't. I'm following else's footsteps. There's nothing I can do. All I can do is just do my best. So, but all in all, it was, back to the beginning, it was a very, I was thrilled. I had never had the chance to do anything steampunk before, and so it was an introduction to that, and I studied a lot about it, and now I'm a devoted steampunk fan, and I intend to continue writing books in that universe.
May I ask quickly, just since this is for an interactive book, and I find that whole idea fascinating, I can't claim to have ever seen one, does your writing like kind of a form of storyboarding, or how do you go about it if the book is to be interactive?
Yeah, there's a lot of storyboarding. So PC and myself and Daniel all had to work lockstep together. So as PC would come up with ideas, we had to talk to Daniel to see if he could illustrate those and make them a reality. And most of the things that PC came up with were fine. Daniel would come up with ideas, and you know, if you look at the look and feel of the book, that's all Daniel. And then I just kind of ran herd over the whole thing and made sure that we were all on the same sheet of music. And so it was very much a collaborative effort. And storyboarding was a big part of it, figuring out what scenes we're going to show illustrations of, how the scenes are going to be organized, all that kind of stuff. It was more like doing a screenplay for a movie than it was writing a book in a lot of ways.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, because I know that Christina wanted us to mention how amazing the artwork looks.
It's sick. It looks so good.
Thank you.
Where did that kind of feel come from? Have you been a steampunk fan? Or was this something that you kind of fell into?
I was actually working on, I had just finished working on a steampunk game called War Squared. And so I had been doing a lot of steampunk art, but I was always trying to steer away from the stereotypical kind of steampunk, and I was trying to mix in a lot of different cultural elements to it, you know, to kind of like broaden that whole thing and take it out of, you know, Europe and kind of bring other elements in. So it was a little bit more of a fantastic kind of steampunk. And then when we went into this project, I did want it to feel very industrial, kind of dark and gloomy, kind of a little bit of even that the noir kind of feel, you know, where everything feels a little bit overcast and at night. But then I wanted to steer way back to more of the conservative and stereotypical kind of steampunk, just for it to feel very realistic and for readers to feel like there's a connection, and it's just not some like something just, you know, pulled out of somebody's hat, but it feels very, very realistic and very possible, you know, to kind of bring people into that world a little bit easier. As I imagine maybe most steampunk, like Sherlock Holmes fans might, you know, how somebody who's a big fan of like the classical, it's a little bit hard for them to move into a reinterpretation of something. So I wanted to try to make that transition as easy as possible.
Well, and that leads me to my next question. Richard, you said you kind of came up with, you know, this idea of mashing the two together, you know, taking Sherlock Holmes and putting it in a steampunk environment. And the story, it works really, really well, and the drawings are fantastic. But were you ever worried that this wasn't going to work?
Well, you know, I guess I was driven more by my own passion for both subject matters, Sherlock Holmes and steampunk, which was really newly evolving for me, the steampunk thing last year. But, you know, there's always that concern that there's going to be a backlash from the Sherlock Holmes fans. Or I thought I was pretty confident that steampunk folks would like it. But so far, it's been the response from Sherlock Holmes fans has been really positive, and I'm very excited about that. PC really went out of her way to make sure she captured the tone and phrasing of Arthur Conan Doyle, and we tried to respect the original properties and characters as much as possible. For the fact we changed them, of course, we made, you know, Watson a bionic man, and we made Mycroft a woman, but we tried to do justice to his material.
When I read the character descriptions on the webpage, I was blown away by how, by the impression I had that, oh yeah, that's them. That's the exact description of these people that, you know, we know so well from the canon. And it's just, it's phenomenally well done.
Thank you so much. You can thank Praise for that. She worked really hard on getting those personalities just right.
So you decided to turn this into an interactive book with multiple platforms. People can read the novella now, right?
That's correct. So it's been out on Smashwords for a little while. It was kind of it was a pre-release, and now it's you know, more or less in its final version. If we get feedback from readers, we always make corrections and stuff like that. But We've got a new cover, which was done by John Colhart, that looks awesome, and it's been pushed out to the major retailers. It's just a matter of waiting for them to actually list it. And we're really excited, and the response to that has also been very positive. You know, when we started out, this was going to be just an iPad project. And what I discovered as we did it was the manuscript, the art, it all stands on its own. And that just led us to the conclusion that we needed to make this available in every format possible. We have just the ebook, was just text for people who don't want to see pictures and interactions. And then we have an audiobook, which is just voice actors doing PC's manuscript. And then we have, the web version and the fully interactive iPad version.
I have the EPUB version, and I just want to say on Smashwords, that is an incredible value for anybody listening. I totally 100% recommend it. Even with just the text, it's absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait to get the interactive version as well, but I totally recommend that if you can get your virtual hands on that, go for it, because you will not regret it.
Oh, that's high praise, and PC is a really good writer, isn't she? I mean, she is just awesome.
Thank you very much. Sometimes it feels awesome, though, when you're in the middle of it.
Well, that's actually a good question. How long did it take for you to get the story down, PC?
Shall we say, it took me about 4 months to complete the entire draft. And after that, it was 2 or 3 months of just going over and over and over, changing everything that could possibly be misconstrued, making endless changes. And sometimes we'd have, debates over the smallest and what would appear to be the most trivial sentences. Because what we wanted to do is keep the original characters as intact as possible, but we had to study the characters very faithfully so that we could put them in a steampunk universe. Because, of course, things you change, like when you move to a different country, you're the same person, but you react slightly differently to the change of circumstances. So I tried to apply it in that context and change Sherlock Holmes. Also, he has a sister, which is completely foreign to his nature. There are no women in his life in the original canon. And so to give him a sister means to put a completely new factor in his entire universe. And that threw me off for a super long time. I had no idea what to do with this guy. He has a sister now. What does he do? Does he shake her hand? Does he kiss her hand? How does he relate to women now that, there's a woman in his life? that one we spent days and days going over whether he should shake her hand or kiss her hand at one point. And we ended up deciding that in respect for her femininity, because she's very, very feminine, he should kiss her hand in the end. That's just a little bit of trivia. But those were some of the struggles that we had to face. Like, to the reader or the person who's enjoying the book, they probably, I hope they won't notice that there were any little struggles here and there. We tried to smooth them over. But there really were some very interesting times when I was just not sure, how is this guy going to react to this? What? You almost have to jump into his skin and live it from his perspective. And Watson too. Watson's just fascinating. I wish we could have given him a bigger part, because he's the narrator. So everything that he sees is colored by his perception. Everything he writes about, it's like you're living it through his eyes and through his mind. And that was a first for me. I had never written a book in a man's first person before. So that in itself was a huge challenge. But I think it came out okay.
I want to ask, have you worked collaboratively like this before, or do you normally write on your own? Because I, as an author myself, it's very different to imagine working so closely with someone else. Is that something that's new to you, or is that something you've done before?
It is and it isn't. It's the first time I've written a fantasy novel collaboratively. I've written a couple of novels that were never published before, but I wrote them on my own inspiration. That is something that I wouldn't have had anybody tamper with my own inspiration for worlds. But since it wasn't originally my idea, shall we say, it was given to me by someone else, naturally I felt like I was a part of a team instead of just the author. Sometimes I didn't even feel like an author at all. I felt more like the researcher and, the clue person, the psychologist. And it was, of course, it does that there is a sting sometimes when someone comes and says, no, change this. Sometimes Richard would tell me, okay, just change this passage. And I had worked particularly hard on it. It was like, do I have to? But in the end, he generally turned out to be right. So I'm not sorry to have had this experience. In fact, I think it's fascinating. If every author can get over their, shall we say, their self pride of their own works and work collaboratively with other people, I think books would definitely improve for the most part.
You're here.
Yes.
That's my personal opinion.
Now, to get the steampunk feel, was it Daniel's drawings that pushed the story along, or was it your descriptions that helped the drawings come to base? I mean, how did that collaboration work?
Go ahead and answer that one, Richard.
Oh, well.
He wasn't there in the long debates. What are you talking about? He wasn't there when we were throwing stuff at each other.
So, you know, that's the question is like impossible to answer. The story really belongs to no one person. I mean, PC, obviously she wrote it. She sweated over every word and sentence in there. And Daniel did the art, but we all drove each other in terms of the plot line and you know, what was going to happen and stuff. And I, you know, as much as I'd love to say, you know, it was all driven by one person or another, you can't. I mean, it was very collaborative. I mean, day in and day out of discussing these things and coming up with solutions. And Daniel, he didn't just do the art, you know, he had ideas on how, you know, the plot should flow and stuff like that. And PC had ideas on, you know, what the art should look like. And, you know, I just tried to, you know, keep those two from killing each other and then, you know, make sure the whole thing came out right in the end. And, you know, there's a lot of times when I had to, you know, say no to certain things or ask for certain revisions. And it was painful for me as it was for them because their heart had gone into it. But I think overall the outcome was better.
So in the sense that you guys seem to have really a fantastic working relationship and have beaten out a lot of the kinks in terms of working on this particular project, can we expect like steampunk naval treaty and steampunk, you know, all these other, there's so many Sherlock Holmes stories. Is there this tiny twinkle in the back of your mind that you could do another one? Or are you really just so focused on getting the funding for this project together and finishing all of the piecework and the polishing on this Bruce Partington plans?
We actually, before we even finished this story, we had a 7-story arc.
Yay!
So, you know, Praise and I and Daniel worked together on ideas of what the overall arc was. And this first book is just the tip of the iceberg. It really just introduces you to the characters, to the world and stuff like that. But the arc itself is far more interesting and complex than we could capture in a single book. And so the plan is not necessarily to keep making adaptations of original stories, but to keep talking in Arthur Conan Doyle's narrative voice through Holmes, but to start bringing in all kinds of other period, I guess you call it speculative fiction authors. So, for instance, the next book in the series is Steampunk Holmes, The Island of Dr. Moreau. After that, we're doing one with, you know, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. You know, it was really the golden age of science fiction, or the start of science fiction with H.G. Wells, Jules Verne, Mary Shelley. And we want to bring all those villains and characters and things into play and have and sew them together into one great big arc that makes sense.
So you've plotted out where the story is going, or you just kind of have an idea and you're just moving along with it?
We have it pretty well plotted out at this point. It's just a matter of sitting down and, you know, there's a big difference between knowing what your overall arc is and how all the different characters are going to play together and stuff like that and actually writing it. But we've got the arc figured out. And from my understanding, this is often how like a TV season is done, for instance. They'll figure out basically what the arc is, where the characters come in, and then they have to, you know, fill in the gigantic gulfs in between as they write the stories.
You guys, I mean, obviously you're the three main collaborators that are going on here, but you're not the only people who are participating in this project, right? There are other people who are?
Yeah, there's voice actors, which have worked very hard on this, in particular Gerald Price and Shash Heyer. Gerald Price did the whole narrative of the book from Watson's perspective, so you'll hear him more than anybody, and he's just got this beautiful voice. And Shash hired, he is the voice of Sherlock Holmes and Lestrade. Then we have a couple other, Nikki did the voice of Mycroft, which was really hard. I feel bad for Nikki because I really made her do things over and over and over and over again because Mycroft is such an important character. And she had many different interpretations on how she should sound, and we finally settled on something. And just the whole crew worked really hard on this. The voice actors, way beyond, you know, what we could afford to pay them, they really put their heart into it, and we're so grateful to them for that. Everybody's worked very hard.
Now, trying to find the voice of your characters, how difficult was that? Because, I mean, obviously the three of you had been collaborating on this for so long, and I'm sure you guys all had an idea of what it needed to sound like.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
PC, why don't you go ahead and pick that one up, because we definitely had our conversations about that.
I think for me the hardest thing to reconcile was that many of the actors who auditioned, I don't suppose they really, the first audition that they put up, never sounds right because they're not really living it. You know, they're just reading a text. And so for me, it was particularly difficult to hear, like, my hard-earned words and sentences, as Richard put it, you know, so hackneyed by someone with no idea what they were talking about. But then after a while, I screwed my head back on straight, and I told myself to stop being so ridiculously emotional about the whole thing. And I realized that these people actually, like, some of them really had talent, and I could just, I started thinking of the future, you know, in 2 or 3 years from now, when this is a, you know, a massive project and everybody in the world knows about it and it's, you know, getting rated up there with the classics and all that. The people are going to hear these words, this story, and these other people's voices. And how's that going to sound? And when I looked at it from that perspective, it totally changed me. And so I think I was able to give one or two, you know, after that, I was able to give one or two, you know, maybe helpful comments. And all in all, I'm pretty pleased with Richard's choice of the cast to record these characters. I think Gerald Price is an excellent narrator, and his voice really does give it that little, you know, it feels like he's really, you know, it's really him talking, and it's, you could almost imagine that he really is Watson, and he's describing these incredible and fantastic, he had the honor of seeing happen right before his eyes and participating in. Sort of like he actually took on the characteristics of Watson as he read it, and when I listened to the final thing, I totally approved. And I haven't heard all the other editions yet. I think Richard has been hiding from me. I don't know why. We'll see. But all in all, I have to say I do trust Richard's judgment. And I know that since this is innately his project, he was the one who came up with it originally. He gets the laurels for it. And I know that he's not going to pick anything subpar. So I trust him in that.
Yeah, so Praise was very focused on what the voice is for, and she even did this hilarious reading of Mycroft, which shows that you could explain to me how Mycroft's intonations were. And I remember listening to it and thinking, well, you know, don't quit your job, but I get it. So I was able to take that to the voice actors and use it. And like I said, you know, I think that we've been working on this project so long, we know these characters so intimately that we're just passionate about every single aspect. So if I was to take all the voice actors who rehearsed for the various parts, it's well over 100. And, you know, from that we picked out, you know, three main voice actors and a couple minor voice actors and stuff like that. But, wow, it's hard. And, you know, all these people, you know, they really are working hard to do it, and you have to tell them to do it over again, or that's not right, or whatever. And it's a long, arduous process.
And this kind of goes, I mean, we're talking about the voice actors, obviously, giving voice to the characters. You've decided to take a story, which normally would just be published in a book and be forgotten about, or, you know, or hopefully not being forgotten about, but people would just read it. You decided to make it something much bigger than that and give people multiple choices on how they can enjoy this story. Do you think that's the future of where story writing is going to be going? Or is this just a way of kind of introducing the story to as many people as possible?
You know, as PC wrote the story and Daniel created the art and we refined the overall story arc, I mean, it just became, very personal. And at one point I realized that it would be criminal for this to only be available to people on an iPad. And I started thinking about, you know, we have these voice actors, we've got this fantastic manuscript, this art and everything. It's got to live in every possible channel. So, you know, I kind of came up with this motto that, you know, we will leave no reader behind. You know, that's driven a lot of what we've done in the later months. I mean, you know, originally it was just going to be an iPad book, but when you fall in love with something, and you really care about it, you want to see everybody enjoy it.
Am I correct in having seen an indication that you guys are actually building the steampunk motorbike?
We
awesome.
Yeah, so that was kind of a sideline, but it's funny. So I had a bike designer in Russia design Sherlock Holmes' motorcycle. It had to be cool. It had to be steampunk. And he had an existing design, but we needed a sidecar for it. And so anyways, he did that. And, you know, he just mentioned to me, gee, I'd love to get this built someday. And I said, you know, you could really build it? And he's like, yeah. And so... So I reached out to Casey Puss in Ohio, who built a Batmobile recently. It's the only rocket engine powered Batmobile. And I just said, hey, if we give you the designs, would you be willing to build this? And he was really excited about it. So, you know, it wasn't our intention to build motorcycles, but the end result is that people will be able to actually order and purchase the motorcycle, which was designed by Sofu Design in Russia and will be built by Casey Push in Ohio. And
marketing technique. I mean, that is epic. Oh.
Yeah, and so that's kind of crazy, and that kind of led to a whole kind of merchandising side to this that we had not really anticipated, but has turned out to be a lot of fun. We hope to offer more goodies for people.
Yeah, I was going to ask about a video game, if you guys are planning anything like that.
Believe it or not, I have not done any planning for a video game. I have been approached by some folks who have a Sherlock Holmes steampunk video game. They want to do a tie-in, but I just have not had time to pursue that recently. So it would be cool, though.
Were you surprised at how big this has gotten? It started off, you know, it's just a simple project, but now you're having motorcycles being built.
Yeah, you know, it's I can't speak for Daniel and Praise, but for me, it's an all-consuming thing, and there's no such thing as too much steampunk Holmes for me. So we're gonna take this as far as we can, basically.
Daniel, what's that like for you to know that some of what you're drawing is actually coming to life? Do you anticipate other factors coming to life too?
Yeah, hopefully. I really enjoyed working with Richard. I mean, right off the bat, I realized that he's an extremely creative person and he's constantly thinking about things in new ways. And I like that. You know, my background's video games. Actually, I work on video games. But I'm constantly interested in getting into new fields and trying new things out and crossing platforms and not sticking to just a specific genre like in my artwork. I like mixing things up, bringing different cultures. So being able to work with Richard was, you know, right away I felt like I got along with him and we were on the same page on day one, because I love that kind of forward thinking and not just sticking to one plan, like, okay, we're only going to do this, but being open to new ideas and seeing where things take you, you know what I mean? Of course, you always need to be practical about it, but, you know, at the end of the day, it was just tons of fun, and hopefully things will grow and take on a life of their own, you know? You know, it's just been a great ride so far, and I think this universe has got so much potential. You know, it's like you're taking a great story, and I was always a Sherlock Holmes fan from day one when I got my first book, and just thinking, you know, with airships and all sorts of, you know, submarines and you know, robots and all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's just so much you can do. So from a visual perspective, it's just a great project, you know. It's a lot of fun.
How long did you work on the artwork that is going into this project? How much time have you put in so far?
Well, I'm not done yet. I don't know, Richard. When did we start?
Well, we're coming up on a year now. Of Daniel.
Yeah, we were supposed to be done last year. Yeah, that just goes to show, you know, kind of Richard's way of working is something that I like a lot, because he doesn't put the financial aspect in the forefront of the production, but he puts it, as I think, in the place it deserves. and you don't just make all these decisions based off of the money you have or on timelines and deadlines, which is something that I deal with a lot in the gaming industry. Everything is just, you know, okay, we need this done by, so it might not be good, you know, it might not be the right product, but that's what's going to go out. And you're always dealing with very tight deadlines, so you can't really expand a lot of times and give the kind of quality product you would like to give. So after the first kind of illustrations, I told Richard, look, this is going to take longer than kind of what we first thought of because, you know, I really want to make something special and impressive. And he was like, sure, no problem. So we pushed the deadline 3 months. And then at the end of those, you know, at the end of the deadline, I was like, you know, it's, and he's like, no problem, man. Just do a good job, you know? So yeah, it was supposed to be like a 4 month, 3 month project. I can't remember now, but yeah, we're running on a year now.
It's clearly a labor of love for all of you.
Yeah. And that's what makes it fun, you know, because you're not doing things just to do them or just because of, for business purposes, but you're really doing it because you just want to make a great story.
So I wanted to bring up something that I've noticed on the website. You've actually gotten approval from the Arthur Conan Doyle estate.
Yeah, so in my infinite wisdom, I chose Sherlock Holmes because the story, the Bruce Parenton story, was in the public domain. And I thought, you know, I don't have to really worry about licensing and that sort of thing. And then I got a wake-up call about 2 months ago when someone said, hey, you know, did you know that Sherlock Holmes is trademarked? I said, no, I didn't. So I reached out to the Conan Doyle estate and said, oh my gosh, you guys, I'm so sorry. I had no idea that this was trademarked. And here's the story. And, you know, we would love to move forward with your permission. And they were very generous. And they looked at the story and they, you know, approved it as is, which was a huge boon for us. And said, you know, go ahead, go for it. And, you know, we did a licensing deal with them. And I was really just so happy. They're great to work with. And I think they recognize, they don't accept every project, and they recognize the high quality we had put into it. And they could have shut us down, but they didn't. They agreed to let us move forward, and we're very grateful.
Were you talking with John Lillenberg?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great in the sense that he really likes alternate projects, like a little bit more alternative, non-traditional Sherlock Holmes projects. He said to me that one of his favorite projects he ever ended up licensing for a film was Without a Clue, which is the classic Michael Caine film in which Watson is actually the brains of the operation. Michael Caine is kind of this puppet figure. I'm so glad that he agreed to license this because it just seems like something that could go worldwide and really just viral. So that's good for everybody.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And, you know, this could have been the end of the project for us. And, you know, he was very accommodating and worked with us on it. And, you know, like I said, we're endlessly grateful.
What was his initial reaction when he found out it was going to be set, you know, that Sherlock Holmes was going to be set in a steampunk universe?
Well, you know, he's pretty open-minded. I mean, he's, of course, you know, his first reaction is, I need to see the manuscript, which I was more than happy to give to him. But, you know, once he looked it over and, you know, I explained up front to him, hey, you know, we made Mycroft a woman and we made, you know, Watson's got a bionic arm, not a lame leg, and just said, you know, we don't want to make changes, but we will accommodate the estate so that we respect your intellectual property rights. And he was very willing. Once he read the script and looked at the art and everything, he just said, you know, this is good. You don't have to change anything. He just said, you know, we just want to make sure that, you know, we get a licensing deal in place. And we turned that around really quickly. So I'm happy.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's nice to have a happy ending.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That was the source of many sleepless nights for a while I waited, you know, to hear, and I didn't know John at all. And as I waited for him to get back to me on, you know, whether we could move forward with the project or not.
I just want to say congratulations. I mean, it looks phenomenal. I haven't yet read it in ebook form or in. I've just perused the website, and I'm in love with it already. It took about 5 minutes, so it's a good sign.
Well. So I really encourage people to download the ebook and read the manuscript. It's wonderful. We don't have the rest of the book ready yet, obviously, but we do have the ebook ready, and you know the audiobook will be ready in a couple months, and there'll be a print edition, and there's going to be if you get on the website, you'll be able to read it on the web, and then of course there's the iPad edition. But you know, if you're really interested, if you really want to, you know, see something different and have some fun with Sherlock Holmes, then, I encourage people to go to Smashwords and look up Steampunk Holmes and download the book. It's really inexpensive, and I think it was 99 cents, and it's a fun read.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that. But you're also raising money right now in order to get your iPad application as well as for other sources as well. So tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter campaign.
Sure. So, you know, to be perfectly honest, we've spent so much more time on this and energy, and we've expanded the scope of this project quite a bit that, you know, we need people's help to be able to finish up doing the iPad application, paying for the development. I want to pay the, I pay the actors, but I need to cover those costs and the artists and stuff like that. So when I discovered Kickstarter, I was like, I said, this is it. This is some way where I can go to the people who will be fans of these two genres and ask them for help so that we can complete this labor of love. And we launched the Kickstarter project, and we're really excited about it. The response has been really good so far, and we're looking forward to, you know, we're not raising an insignificant amount of money. I mean, these things, it costs money to develop the interactive website, the iPad book, to pay the artists and everything like that. But we're confident that people will see the value in this and step forward and make contributions. And, you know, if we can make that happen, we can bring all this to everybody enjoy. And all the contributors to the Kickstarter project really get some great benefits in terms of, like, for instance, just for a $9 contribution, you get access to all 7 volumes of the series as they're created and stuff. And so we're trying to, you know, reward early patrons as much as we can and you know, show our appreciation. And so far, the reaction's been really positive. So we need help. You find this interesting and you think this is a cool idea, you know, please go out to Kickstarter, look up Steampunk Holmes, and contribute what you can, because this all helps us realize this dream.
No, and it's great. And anybody who's interested in it, just you go there, you know, you can contribute as little as a dollar.
Yep.
And you know, hopefully, you know, people that are interested in it will check it out and be able to help you guys out, because it's a fantastic project and I am excited about it. I hope, you know, eventually it'll come out soon on a tablet so that, you know, people can be able to interact with the story.
And I want to say I'm a huge steampunk fan, and just for any steampunk fans or Holmes fans or both, like I am, this is such a beautiful marriage of two things. It's not a gimmick for one or a gimmick for the other. It's just a really organic linking of steampunk and Sherlock Holmes, and it's such a beautiful thing that you would not be disappointed. And I do want to ask you guys, I think the one other big sort of steampunk Holmes thing that's in sort of the popular consciousness right now is obviously the Guy Ritchie films, which kind of have, not to the extent of what you guys are doing, but they have sort of that steampunk feel. And I'm wondering if you guys are fans of those films or if you guys have an opinion.
They're great. I mean, I like them. I think they certainly depart a little more strongly from the character types, but they stay more in the era than we do. And so, but they're fun. And you know, I would be a liar if I didn't say they didn't help inspire. Originally, I was just doing Sherlock Holmes. I wasn't doing a steampunk tie-in, but after seeing, you know, Robert Downey Jr. and, you know, them doing that, their work, I decided that it would be fun to do the steampunk spin on it.
For me, aesthetically, it's a beautiful film. Like the designs, the costumes, the sets. I mean, it's just so well done. And as Richard said, the characters are really different. But in a way, I almost prefer it. If you can't, you know, hit the exact character like right on the head, just come up with a new one that works. Yeah, because if you're going to do a bad job imitating Sherlock Holmes, I'd much rather that you just be yourself, like Robert Downey Jr. And like the relationship he has with Watson, Sherlock Holmes has with Watson, is completely different than the relationship they have in the book, for me.
It's interesting because I would completely agree with that assessment that it's a much better idea to create sort of an alternate universe than a crap job at an established one.
Yeah, they have a relationship that works. It's a great relationship. It's a great friendship. It's not the friendship in the books, but it's a friendship that works. I discussed this quite a bit with Praise, with PC Martin. You know, we've discussed this how the characters are different, but at the end, the friendship works, the relationship works. It's different, but it works, you know.
And that's right. And for me, when I first got introduced to the project, I immediately started researching everything I could find about Sherlock Holmes, including the films, the past series done by BBC. Pretty soon, very soon, I realized, actually, that if I wanted to provide a faithful continuation of Doyle's style, I had to stick to nothing but Doyle. Until the main draft was finished. And afterwards, I enjoyed watching both the films and the series and everything else. And I read several of the other books, too, done by more contemporary authors. I read The Beekeeper's Apprentice, for instance. I thought that one was fun. Nothing to do with anything was fun. And but I think as far as the movies went, I really enjoyed them. Like Daniel said, they were aesthetically just marvelous, really, really good. The characters were very well expressed and well defined too. They did stray away from the beaten path of Doyle's like description of them, but they were excellently done. I say congratulations to everybody who participated in those films. And I hope someday that if our book project ever escalates into making a movie, I hope that whoever does that will do it just well.
Yeah, that would be great.
I'm thinking Richard will probably go there eventually. You know, when I first got introduced to the project, it was to be a 10,000 to 12,000 word short story. By the end of the first week, after he had given me like the entire, you know, like a couple pages of tips that he wanted included in the story, I said, look, I could do one or the other, but I can't do both. So give me a bit more space. And he said, sure, 30,000 words, 40,000, whatever, just, you know, do whatever you like. And then by the end of, I think it was 1 or 2 months, it certainly wasn't longer than 2 months, he already started approaching me about continuing, leaving it on a cliffhanger or something so we could make another book. And I was like, sure, I'll do anything. And then by the end of the project, he was like, okay, this is like the first book of a 6-part or 7-part or maybe 8-part or 10-part series. I was like, wow, this is
That's
awesome.
Good to me.
Well, I'm just looking forward to continuing. Actually, at the beginning of the year, I got a complete series of Wells, and I've been faithfully studying that. I don't enjoy it quite as much as Doyle, but it's fascinating. So I hope to be full of my subject by the time Richard gives me the next draft to work on.
Yeah, we're really excited about moving forward with the other books, and like I said, we want to do homage to the other great writers of that time and even before, like Mary Shelley and stuff like that. And we're not going to have vampires, glittering vampires or anything like that, but...
Bless you.
Anything that's technology, anything that's science fiction is going to play a big role because, in essence, steampunk is a form of science fiction and or speculative fiction. And I love the work of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells and Mary Shelley, and we want to see those... Not their writing style, but their worlds come into collision with Sherlock Holmes' world and see what happens. It's pretty interesting. Moriarty is really very significant in this whole thing, but that comes in the story arc.
Thank you so much for chatting.
Thank you.
Oh, we're so grateful. I'll just speak on my own behalf, but I'm so grateful that you had us on and that you appreciate what we're doing. And we're going to be listening to your podcasts. And we'll become your biggest fans.
Well, thank you very much, and best of luck. And for any of the listeners out there who love Sherlock Holmes and love steampunk, check these guys out. Go to the website. It's steampunkholmes.com. Go to the Kickstarter campaign if you can donate some money. Help these guys out because it's fantastic. And I honestly cannot wait to read the other stories that you guys have lined up.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, yes, thank thanks you. For your time. It's been great.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2 to 1?